What up, folks? Get Out the Room is back. Get Out the Room, episode 82. Get Out the Room, a whenever we feel like putting out an episode, horror and pop culture podcast. I am your host.
This is pretty quick, though. This is pretty quick after.
3 weeks? Yeah.
Yeah, that'd
be shit less than a month. Yeah, that's probably pretty true.
Actually, I would say 2 weeks.
Is it? I hope so. I haven't looked. I'll check.
I'm going to say two.
All right. Well, by the time this shit actually get out, it'll clearly be three. But what?
Shit.
Yep, exactly. You have now jinxed us. I blame you. But yes, I am your host, Day, and the voice that you hear is my man, as always, Scott. What's going on, man?
Pretty good. I have the TV muted in the background here, and there's a 1800 tequila commercial with Scott Adkins, as a boxer. And I'm like, man, he kind of fell from grace if he's doing tequila commercials.
You never know.
I mean, not that he was a huge star anyway, but.
Right. I'm actually watching The Lords of Salem.
Ah.
The Rob Zombie witch movie.
Have you ever seen it?
No.
Yeah, I've never seen it either.
It's, you know, the opening scene, and it's already taken a strange turn.
No.
Exactly, right. Exactly, yeah. So, for anyone who's new, Get Out the Room can be found iTunes, Stitcher Radio, Podomatic, Listenopoly, anywhere good podcasts are found. So, let's jump right into it. We have talked about this film basically since last year. It came out in September, the British film, The Girl with All the Gifts. Gemma Arterton?
Is it Gemma or Gemma?
I'm not really sure. Not sure. as we are not British. Yeah. And I've heard it both ways, to be very honest with you, so I'm not really sure, honestly.
Oh, okay.
But she is Helen Chestineau, and we are in the, I wouldn't say post-apocalyptic, we are in just...
Maybe just before?
No.
Alternate?
Like, if there is anything as just apocalyptic, we are in the midst
dystopian.
Dystopian. Good word. Yeah.
Actually, I'm looking at a synopsis.
There you go.
Yeah.
Like, we are just in the point of, shit is hitting the fan. They call them hungries instead of zombies.
Yeah.
We're losing the fight, people. And yeah.
Just in it because of what they're, I guess, how far along they are.
Yeah, no, you're right. So I guess we are kind of post-apocalyptic at that point then. Because, humans have certain areas that are set up for them to live in, The biggest outside of London is called Beacon, with the really nice imagery. Beacon, right. Kind of the home, the sanctuary, the safety point. But we're not anywhere close to that. We start the entire tale at kind of an outpost with some of these hungries who've infected children. And the children have retained some of their, cerebral functions. Most people would already know, if you're a zombie, all you want to do is eat and kind of just go about their business of eating and eating and eating and eating. But these kids have retained their functions. They retained their ability to think.
Well, it's the next generation of the fungus.
Well, to some extent, because... Not all of them have it. It's one of those things where this particular group got caught at the right stage of their development. So it's still, if it hits an adult, they're just going to go down. But it caught the kids at the time where they didn't turn hungry all the way. They're just kind of, yeah, the fungus or whatever the thing that turns you into a zombie, it infects you, but it doesn't turn you all the way. And so right. We're at the point where we're trying to figure out what is the thing and how do we reverse it? How do we get humanity back? Glenn Close is in this, and she's a doctor who's working to reverse it. She's trying to save humanity.
Yeah. And I wonder how they got her to be in this.
I mean, if you've read the book, man, the book is incredible. And my wife and I, we did the audiobook whenever we take long trips and whatever.
Oh, okay. It's just,
that's how we did it. And it's just really well done. It's super, super descriptive. When it was translated to the movie, it moves so fast comparatively to what you have in the book. So there's that. But
the book is way better.
Yeah. The book is definitely way better. There's so much background given to who Helen Justino is as a person. There's a lot of things that you don't really get in the film.
So the ending is a little more impactful.
All of it's more impactful, just from the fact that I want to give this away. Part of me, I'll put it to you like this: there's a scene between the sergeant and Miss Justineau in the book where you start to truly understand how Miss Justineau got to where she is. Up until this point, you just think that she's a teacher and that's all there is to it. But when you get this, with a little bit of background and they flesh out who she is, I mean, it just makes her a little bit more complex. It makes her a little bit more 3D. There are not a ton of actual three-dimensional characters in this film. The only person with any amount of real background is Melanie.
Yes.
The girl with all the gifts. And right. One of the things that I think
kind of it's detrimental to the film that way a little bit.
I agree. I was just about to say that. I'm with you 100% on that. Go ahead and expand on it.
Well,
expound.
This is one of those films that it left me. I was kind of excited about it. I really liked the trailer. I liked the premise. You had said how good the book was. I was hyping it up a lot in my mind. And when I watched it, I liked it, but it never quite gripped me the way I wanted to. It's kind of hard to explain. And I think what we were just talking about plays a lot into that. I mean, the characters that you're supposed to care about a lot, Justineau, Gemma Arterton, Glenn Close's doctor, whatever her name was, and then the sergeant are the other three main characters. And you never, I don't know, you never really feel for them enough to care ultimately what happens to them like you do to Melanie. Now, Melanie's character might be the most developed and interesting, but I also was a little let down by, I don't know, usually when you, a movie like this, you would expect that performance to just blow you away. And the girl did a good job, but it was good, not great.
Yeah, the other person you care about is Kieran.
Kieran, yes. And Kieran, that's another one where it's like, okay, all the characters, you're just kind of like, okay. Hit you in the gut.
Yeah, Kieran's one of the only ones you actually give a shit about. You feel...
Because that's an intriguing part of the film.
Yeah, we also kind of feel a sense of...
And it was cool. That was actually like, they went there with that, too.
They did. I just felt bad for the kid, because you feel like he was ill-equipped to be in the situation he was in the first place, and the whole situation. You're just like, oh. But...
You knew what was happening to him right when it happened.
When
he stepped out, you go, well...
So one thing to warn folks, and I don't want this to turn anybody off to the point where they don't want to see it. This is a science nerd's zombie film.
Yeah, I mean, in a way, we're nitpicking, kind of, because...
Yeah, it's a good film. It's a good film.
It is a good film. It's a good, not great film, and if that's my biggest complaint about it, then it's... I mean, I would recommend it, so...
Yeah, you know, I would absolutely recommend it, but it is a science nerd's idea of a zombie film, because there aren't too many gigantic scenes like in 28 Days Later where you get the shaky cam and you're moving. There's like one real big scene where you kind of get the idea of what it is the hungries of zombies are about. But other than that, you're learning about the organism that turns people into zombies. You're learning about what it is, the science behind all that, that makes them what they are. And that's some of the most exciting parts of this. Or I shouldn't say exciting, but the driving parts of the film. You know, Dr. Caldwell, Glenn Close's character, that's really all she cares about. You know, in the book, she's a much more despicable, kind of a sinister character, so to speak.
Gotcha.
You know, she's very much, by any means necessary. And this is... She's just a very driven doctor trying to save humanity. So there's a very different kind of sensibility that comes along, which I think Glenn Close does very well, but I don't know.
She does. It's a little wild to see her fighting zombies, though.
Yeah, yeah.
It just took me off guard, because you don't usually think of Glenn Close doing that.
Right, like, is Meryl Streep going getting the next, you know, World War Z movie? Like, that kind of shit.
Right. Yep.
But
there is a really good scene in the film, though, that really amps it up a lot, and that's the memorable scene of the movie when the outpost has to deal with a kind of an outbreak, I guess, or a takeover. I don't know how to put it.
Yeah, I mean. Yeah, I'm not really sure how you put it either, but yeah, you know, as the military outpost has to deal with a whole bunch of hungries.
Yeah.
You know, there's a lot. So, in the book, there's a lot of other elements to the story that they've pared down to make a more linear story here. So, it just moves faster. They trimmed the fat on a lot of stuff.
Right.
Which is kind of disappointing in some ways. In others, it's completely understandable. You just want to make a better film.
Right.
So, no, I get it. But looking at all this, having seen the film, you know, I think, and you and I talked about this, there is a really incredible sense of sadness that comes along when you get to the end of the film, or just like when you see the entire film, there's a really strong sense of sadness, you know, particularly because you have watched this film from the point of view from an adolescent. You know, you and I talked about this earlier, or I kind of gave the imagery of when you find, you know, that little frog in the creek when you're a kid, and you take that frog home and you put it in a jar and you poke holes in the jar to give it air, and then you give it a piece of celery to eat because you're not really sure what they eat. But, you know, you protect that frog from anything. You won't let anybody mess with it. Your parents are like, get the damn thing out of here. You're like, no, this is my froggy. And having no real clue what you're doing to the frog, but you believe in your heart of hearts that you're giving this frog the best life you could ever give it.
Right.
That's how I felt about the film at the end.
Yep. That's a great analogy.
Yeah, man.
I mean, it's, and I think I mentioned it's kind of, sociopathic, or no, what the hell am I thinking? Sociopathic. I don't know if that's actually a word. Doesn't sound like a word.
It is, yeah.
Sure. Okay. There's a little bit of that. But it's almost like it's childlike, obviously, but it's because there's a sense of not knowing, and that's kind of what makes it, you know, that kind of gives you the bittersweet notes. It's like I'm drinking a wine here. The bittersweet notes in the.
Yeah, man, them tannins, you know what I mean? Where that should hit you in the tongue, just go with those tannins. No, but... if for anyone who's ever been out to wine country, y'all know what I'm talking about. For anyone who's really serious about this shit, you know, it's a really good film, but it's not your regular zombie film. They create a world that you feel like should be kind of large and sweeping.
Yep.
And that just doesn't happen. Like, you don't get a chance to explore and see any of that.
Right.
That's just not what we're doing here. This is a really kind of scaled down view of the situation. And the point of view changes. So, you know.
Yeah.
You take that for however you like.
Right.
Scores.
I would probably go 7.5.
7.5. Okay. I think I'm gonna go. Like I said, this is a thinking film, man. This isn't one that you just kind of like you can watch and enjoy. When you think about it later, it may be better to you. But I don't necessarily know if it's gonna be better than 7.5. I kind of feel like the more space away from this you get, your score will probably fall to a flat 7.
I agree.
You know, as a science nerd and someone who has read the book, I feel like it's a 7. I think it's a good 7. I give it that. Definitely a recommend, definitely a whirl. And the young actress who plays Melanie, I think, is incredible.
Yeah, she did a good job.
I thought she did a really great job. You know, for a film where you may not necessarily realize this at the time, she's really carrying the whole effing film.
Yeah.
So, her name is Sienna Nunona. And, yeah, Sienna Nuola, I believe. She's great. I liked her a lot.
It's the girl from The Girl with All the Gifts.
Yeah, <He's> stupid. Yeah, man. But I really liked her a lot, and I was happy with the film. You know, obviously there's more they could have done, but I was happy with it. I'm not upset with it. Like, I mean, I'll take it.
It's kind of weird that after our last show, getting a 7.5 seems kind of underwhelming for a 7, you know?
Yeah, but it shouldn't be. You know, and the other thing, we got to reset and kind of calibrate after you see, you know, a whole bunch of 9s, man. Like, it's really fucking tough. Like,
well,
understand, like, them shits are phenomenal. These are phenomenal films that we're watching.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, that's absolutely right. That's what's great about it.
So, you know, talking about that, let's go ahead and pivot to some spoilery talk. From this moment on, if you have not seen any of the films that we talked about in the past, we're about to spoil the shit out of them. Do you want to start with Logan? Or do you want to start with Split?
Yeah, let's go Split to Logan, like we did last. I think that was the last, or the order they came out.
Yeah. So we'll start with Split. We just dive right into it.
Now we could finally say.
Yeah.
The scene that I think my mouth did drop open when they panned out and they showed Bruce Willis sitting up at that bar.
Yeah.
And I watched this with my wife, and she has never seen Unbreakable. And so she's watching it, and she's just everybody. There are people in the audience that some gasped, and you know, it was kind of a full theater. I mean, it wasn't packed or anything, but there were some people that were really excited, and a lot of people were like, "Bruce Willis." And I think somebody behind me was like, "What the hell is Bruce Willis doing there?"
Yeah.
So it's a nice twist because we've never really seen a movie that has done that without the marketing to allow you to know what's going on.
Yeah, it's super impactful, you know, 30-second, 45-second scene. Oh, but also, before we leave this, I just wanted to say it's hilarious to me that this black-ass African dude is playing a character named Kieran Gallagher, who should all definitely be a redhead Irish guy. But
oh, that's all right. I mean, they've replaced what is his name? Red in Shawshank Redemption in the book is an Irishman.
Yeah, but it's fucking Morgan Freeman, so.
Well, that's why it's cool, but I'm just saying.
You mean it's fucking Morgan Freeman, so yeah. We gonna let that go.
Right.
But yeah, back to what we were saying about Split. You know, I had that shit ruined for me, and it just blew me. Yeah. I was so angry.
When you told me that, it hurt it for me. Like, it hurt me. I was like, oh, man, really?
Yeah, it just fucking ruins the situation.
So, were you a fan? Did you like Unbreakable?
I did. I really liked Unbreakable.
Yeah, so
obviously, and here's the thing, and, you know, I am definitely a very large Samuel Jackson fan, but I'm also completely understanding of his limitations in terms of acting, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Where there are times where he just plays Sam all the time over and over and over again, right?
Yep.
I felt like Unbreakable was one of the few times where he actually played a role. And he got lost in it and he enjoyed it.
Yes, I would agree with that.
See, so yeah, I'm a huge fan of Unbreakable.
But yeah, so that does suck. Well, I was just, that sucks that you had it ruined. So I may have said this on the last show. I'm not a big Sixth Sense fan because I've had that was ruined before I watched that. So my big M. Night movie was Unbreakable and Signed. You know, when I saw those were really the ones that impacted me. So I'm sitting in this theater watching Split. I was just blown away by a movie that was really great. You know, I mean, great performances. It was kind of scary. It went over the top, and suddenly when you see this scene, the whole movie kind of snaps into a new light. I mean, because when you see James McAvoy become, what do they call the creature?
The beast.
The beast. When you see that, the first thing you think is, well, man, I mean, because up to that point, I'm going to say grounded, but I'm saying it with quotation marks. It was grounded to an extent.
Absolutely.
And then you see him become the beast, and you're like, I don't know. And then you see that last scene and you go, got it. And now it makes perfect sense. And that is all the cooler because now you understand that characters like that do exist in that world.
Yep.
And it's okay.
Yeah. Yeah. Like you're no longer having to like fight yourself on the limitations of a real world. You're in a superhero world, supervillain world. And this is the birth of a supervillain. And that makes everything that much better.
Yep. It was. It was kind of like a super villain origin story of sorts.
Yeah.
And we've never really seen a movie like that.
No, we absolutely. I mean, because the thing is, we're still, it doesn't necessarily change the point of view.
True.
You know, we're still with Anya Taylor-Joy throughout the majority of the film, and that's fine.
Right.
But the other aspect of all that shit is this. We're now watching someone who Bruce Willis is going to have to fight. We're watching him be created. You know, does that lead us to a place where Bruce Willis may have to come back for Unbreakable 2? Or who knows? Whatever the thing may be.
Right.
Whatever it may be called. But we're watching the birth of a character. And an interesting character. And one who, you know, takes on completely different everything depending on the personality that's driving. That's really fucking cool, man.
Yeah, it is. It makes you kind of think, you know, because, you know, M. Night, after the movie came out and everybody started realizing, and it was kind of one of those things I recommended to people, you've got to see Split. And I said, well, what is it about? And I said, I would kind of tell them a little bit, and I said, it's better if you don't know anything. Don't read anything. Like, and see it quick, because if you don't, it's going to get spoiled for you. And as it started happening, you know, you started seeing more like, are they making a sequel to Unbreakable? I'm like, damn, I hope nobody reads this before they see Split because it's going to be ruined. And my roommate in college, I who I went to go see Logan with him, and he hadn't seen Split yet, and he's a gigantic Unbreakable fan. And I told him, I said, man, you really, really need to go see Split. And he goes, yeah, you know, I don't know. M. Night kind of lost me with his last few movies, and I was like, yeah, that's understandable. But you really, really need to see. I almost wanted to tell him like why he should go see it, but I can't. That's the twist.
Yeah, exactly. It's hard, man. It's hard, especially because we know that M. Night has kind of fallen on, you know, hard times. Like, it's hard to get a motherfucker to give M. Night the benefit of the doubt now.
It is. It absolutely
between After Earth and, you know, The Happening and
The Visit. Yeah.
You know,
Last Airbender.
Oh, wow. That's a lot of shade. Yeah. Uh-huh. Yeah, it's true. Like, the motherfucker don't have a whole bunch of goodwill. So to get someone to see a film that might be somewhat interesting, but you still got to convince a motherfucker to go see it. But once you do, you know, I think we'll all agree that shit was completely worth it.
I know he hasn't seen it yet, because I might go like, yep, I fucked up.
You know, one of the things that I wasn't even looking in any particular place for my shit to get spoiled. That's the thing that blew me.
I know. Yep.
Like, someone was just like, oh, I think it's a sequel to some movie called Umbrella. I was like, wait a minute, hold on. Some movie called Umbrella? What the fuck is wrong with you?
Yep.
So, yeah. That was that blower, but I still enjoyed the film. I still liked it a lot. It just I didn't have that moment that makes that film.
Yeah. I went in not really knowing anything other than I watched the first trailer. I thought it looked kind of cool. I was going to give it the benefit of the doubt. I think reviews at that point, the early reviews were that it was good. So I went in just thinking, I'm going to go in and see a pretty good movie with James McAvoy killing it. And then that last scene happens. I was stunned. I haven't been stunned like that in a long time. And I was very impressed.
A lot of props to M. Night for that one, man. You managed to pull it off, you know, especially in the IMDb age where, you know, like for Justice League, trailer came out, but you look at IMDb page, Henry Cavill's on it. It's like, well, fuck, we know Superman's coming back. Just go and put him in the trailer.
Well, but I mean, we knew that from the end of the Batman vs. Superman, though.
They alluded to it, but now we have proof. You know what I mean?
Well, right.
Like, IMDb kills stuff like that. So to have that gigantic twist happen and for it not to become kind of general knowledge is really fucking cool.
Yep, I agree.
So, yeah.
Very impressive. Split.
Incredibly. Split, still good.
Absolutely.
And next up, Jordan Peele's Get Out.
Oh yeah, man. This is another one. And I think ever since seeing this, my recommendation has been watch Get Out. This is going to be a movie that film classes are going to be looking at probably in
next year.
Five years, 10 years. It's going to be like a film study film.
Yeah, no, it absolutely is.
And it resonates. The more I'm away from it, the more I can't wait to see it again. And it's one of those movies that I think, and I'm saying this, of course, as a white, it shows what I imagine as best as someone could, how uncomfortable it is to be in that position. Because, you know, and the scene I'm going to relate, of course, is the dinner, you know, when they have the dinner scene, or when they have the scene where all the guests come. And that whole scene is just, like, incredibly, you know, you just make that screw face and go, oh, no.
Oh, man, but before you even get to that, fucking Caleb Landry Jones, who we didn't really give a lot of props to in the first
Yeah, well, yes, but what I mean is they really went there when all the guests were there. Like, that was just
when it
was like, oh, they took it there.
But see, I don't even feel like Jordan Peele went and took it there. You know, for a black dude who's educated and has been placed in situations where there are a bunch of white folks in the woods and shit. Like, I'm not saying that shit happens regularly. I'm saying it's happened before. Like, right. Once, right?
Right.
Those conversations, that's not going there. Like, this motherfucker is literally pulling recollections from his life. He and his boys are like, yo, what that motherfucker say to you? So what is it about the black experience that you like in America? Like, hold on, motherfucker, what? You got fucking smiley, like, fuck out of here. The one Asian dude who believes he's above being Asian, so he can now try and fucking, you know, vote on and, you know, try and bid on a black man's life. Like, do motherfuckers even pick up on that shit?
Yeah.
Like, Asian folks, this shit is masterful in terms of race relations and, you know, the parts that people play.
Absolutely.
You know, the other thing that people have to recognize in that entire scene, every white person has something red on.
Oh, you know what? I don't think I noticed that.
Yeah.
Really?
Some stitch of red, yep.
Wow.
So Chris, you know, stands out even more so. Daniel Kaluuya stands out even more so because everybody has that little stitch of red. And you're like, oh.
Ooh, that's some shade right there.
Message.
Wow.
Message.
Okay. Well played. Well played.
There you
played.
Go. There you go.
So, okay. So we're kind of revisiting from the last show. There's two points I want to clarify from my comments from the last show.
Okay. You went back and listened to the show.
No, because I was misinterpreted on them. Okay. And that was my fault. So I had said the one twist, I guess, when you find out that when what's her name's fumbling for the keys in her purse.
Roro.
Yeah,
Rose turns into Roro when she's
black.
But trying to kill black people.
So you were saying you find out just before that when he sees all those pictures about her. Okay, and I agree you do, but I guess what I was thinking was she was convincing enough to me. I thought she was also being brainwashed to bring the black people to their house.
Right. So, she was the white girl bait.
Correct.
That's my man, Dr. Claus. She claw bait.
Yes, that's it. Exactly.
She's like the literal embodiment of clawbait.
Yes. So I guess when that happened, I was kind of expecting her to be also kind of duped as well. And that was, I guess it wasn't as shocking as I was hoping it would be. You know, I was just kind of like, oh, okay, so she's in on it again. Okay, that makes sense. It's a small thing, but the clarity there is, I understand they showed it before. However, I was assuming that she was also brainwashed too.
Yeah, there's a cynicism that comes along with that shit, you know, especially from being a black dude, you know, who has, you know, been in that situation for with a white chick, you know, to the point of, like, her grandmother's 80th birthday party, I'm out there frying a whole bunch of fried chicken for a bunch of white people. That shit was not the greatest look in my life. But
oh, man, did somebody get a photo of you doing this?
Hell the fuck no, they didn't.
Oh, God dang it. That would be so good. I'm gonna Photoshop your face on something like that.
Yeah, on a bucket of Kentucky Fried Chicken. This is the racist shit ever. The most racist shit ever. But
oh, gosh, like, that's awesome.
There's nothing awesome about that shit. You know, I was happy to do it. My fried chicken is really fucking good, but god damn it, for like 20 white people, I'm the only black dude for miles in this part of Rhode Island. It's just so ridiculous.
They probably thought the same thing. Not bad, boy. You make fried chicken? Hell yeah, you make fried chicken.
Of course you do. Yeah. Do you make any watermelon margaritas?
Oh, damn.
Fucking picking any. Of course you do.
Damn it.
Oh, man.
Oh.
But yeah.
Okay, and so the other comment I had was I had said, and this was just me. So, I loved the ending. I had commented that I thought that it should have gone the other way with the ending, and what I mean by that is when the film ends and the cop pulls up the cop car, you expect the one, you expect it to end like we've been conditioned to expect situations like this to end in real life. And when it flips it, you know, the twist is that it's just his buddy. And that's like like signing your name at the bottom of a masterpiece painting. You know, that's just like a great way to end the film.
And it turns on your head. I mean, it bunks the traditional convention of what, like you said, what we've all come to think and know is going to be the way it played out.
Right. Well, like when I first saw the lights and I'm watching the movie, I think I like out loud. The place wasn't super, the theater wasn't super crowded. And I think I went myself to see the movie. And I said out loud, I was just like, oh shit, he's going down. No, like, I was like, shit, man, that sucks. Because nobody's going to believe his story of what just happened.
Yeah, no, I mean, everybody thought, like, the entire theater was just like, ain't this about a bitch? That same goddamn cop from the beginning going to be the one to take him in. And when Rel steps out, the fucking crowd cheered, man.
Oh, man, it's great. It's a great way to end a movie that is just, it's going to be, I mean, we're going to be talking about this. This will be a movie we reference on the show probably quite a bit.
Yeah, I mean, and the other thing is, and this is a story I just talked to you about. You know, one of the ladies that I work with, who's really, really great lady, you know, she remarked to me how much the film stuck with her after she'd seen it. She's a person who doesn't normally watch horror films. This was really outside of kind of the normal way in which she operates. But the film was so well done that, you know, there was parts of it that she missed. She missed the Jesse Owens reference where, you know, the father was like, yeah, he almost got over it. And then the next thing you know, you see the gardener, you know, sprinting full speed because he's running. He now has the body in which he believes he can beat Jesse Owens in. And, you know, he's training for this race that's never going to come, but it's still in his mind every day. You know, she missed that part. You know, the aspect of, you know, Chris having to literally pick Cotton to save his life. God damn it, why must we pick God? Like, that's so fucked up, right?
Yeah.
The fact that, you know, they only did one black lady because even when she didn't need any flash to, like, fight out of her sunken place, whenever she saw Chris, you know, she was trying to get out of her sunken place.
Right.
Like, she was literally fighting to get free. Like, yeah, we can't do this shit anymore with black women. They too strong. Like, the suggestion just don't work the same. You know what I mean?
Yep.
You know, when you start pulling up these small things that a lot of people just miss. You know, what was the other one that we were talking about before?
The other what?
Oh, how the father got killed with the deer with the elk head and all that kind of shit. But
oh yeah.
Okay. You know, and then Roro keeping the milk and cereal, the white, the pristine milk and the colored separate.
Oh, like, man. I tell you what, that's something else. Like when I remember watching it, noting it, and thinking like, the fuck is this psycho bitch doing? And then when I was reading a review after, and I'm like, wow. That right there is just, again, that's another nice little signature, you know?
Yeah, look. Go ahead.
It digs deep. I mean, it's one of those, like, they're such bad people, they can't even eat their cereal with milk.
Right.
It's just like, wow.
Gotta keep them whites and them colors separate, bruh.
Damn.
Yeah, one of the things that I talk to people about is the very first scene with Lakeith Stanfield and the words that he uses in conversation when he's on the phone are super poignant, man. Like, I think there are a lot of times where people don't truly believe that black folks are as keenly aware of the danger that kind of living in a white dominated world poses to them in certain situations.
Right.
You know, and that conversation was kind of there to let you know, like, we're super aware of how things, of the optics and how we may be perceived and, you know, what could go wrong at any moment in time. And at one point, whatever he was willing to do, the cost, to the possible cost was too high for him to stay. He was like, fuck it, I'm out.
Right.
He had already hit the eject button on whatever he was thinking to do that night because of the car. He was like, nah, I'm not fucking with this, I'm out.
Yep.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So, that shit is masterful.
It is.
Like, Jordan captured, you know, the black experience in this country in a way that very few people will be able to do again. And so, like, there are a lot of kind of heavy-handed and, but also really, really accurate kind of portrayals of blackness in America. But they're almost so real in a way that they're difficult to swallow. And I feel like this was the perfect kind of palate appetizing way for it to go through. And I was really happy about it.
Now, did you know the film was originally supposed to end with the cops arresting him?
I didn't until I read that part later, but it made sense. You know, that's the fear. That moment of seeing those red and blue lights, you're just like, ain't this about a bitch?
Right.
We did all this shit. This bitch is still alive. She's like, oh, he did it. He did it. Like, that's fucked up.
Yeah. Yep.
You know what I mean? And remember, so you were just like, oh, that would have been a great ending. I'm like, that would have been so fucking bleak.
Yeah, you're right. No, absolutely. You're right. It would have been very bleak. But again, we're used to endings like that. We're horror guys. I mean, the bleak endings are what we, so I, you know, you expect it, but again, you expect it because you expect it because it's a horror movie. You expect it because we're conditioned that way in society. And that's just like the thought I saw cop lights and I'm like, oh, he's screwed now.
Yep.
I was like, he can't explain. And like, he might as well have just gotten up and started talking Klingon. And that would have helped him more.
Yep.
Budget was $4.5 million. It's up to $156 million.
I'm not amazed, but I'm kind of shocked that it's still going. Like, it's still going. $156 million. That's a ton of dough, man.
It is. It is.
$4 million. That's great. I'm super excited.
I'd like this to stick around long enough to be, you know, around for Oscar season, but I doubt it.
Yeah, it's not gonna happen, and that's fine.
The only reason I bring that up is it's because this and Logan were released so early that it's kind of a shame that they're gonna get overlooked. I mean, look, we're still so early in the year, so it's easy for me to say this about movies I don't even know about yet. But these two movies are really good, so I don't understand. I mean, man.
You know, would you put them up for picture of the year, screenplay?
I could see
screenplay for Jordan Peele.
Absolutely. That's. I mean, the strength is the screenplay. That's the real winner. Look, Daniel Kaluuya did a really good job.
Yeah.
He could easily get a nomination if I were picking people, of course. I thought Allison Williams did a really good job.
This is the most I've liked Allison Williams in anything.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, shit, I can't stand Girls. That show's just the most annoying, shitty piece of crap. So, seeing her in this, I was a little apprehensive because of that, but she was really good.
Yeah. And,
I mean, it's just a great flick. I mean, I would I hope it gets something, some sort of recognition from something.
I think the best chance it would have in any type of Oscar ceremony would definitely be adapted screenplay or best original screenplay.
Yep.
So, but you know, I'll take it for whatever it is. I'll take that.
Oh, absolutely.
That goes in the genre book. That goes in, you know, that's on our team. So I'll take that.
Right.
But yeah, any other last thoughts before we get out? Before we move off of Get Out.
I know. If you haven't seen it at this point, shit, what are you waiting for? If you're listening to our show and you haven't seen it yet, I'm not.
Yeah, you're fucking up. Yeah, we already told you this whole show is going to be spoilery, so.
Yep.
Joke's on you, Jack.
Correct.
But this is a cautionary tale of what it's like to date white women.
Yeah, says Damon. You would know. Right.
I got two little kids, man. You know, I did not heed the warnings. Blew through those bitches.
I gotta show my friend Ray. I think he saw it. He really liked the movie too. I think I joked with him. I was just like, "Dude, you gotta be careful, man."
Yeah, man. I'm about to say something crazy. I'm not gonna put Dre in the street like that. Like, you be tempting me to put Dre in the street, and you should really tell him. Like, that he should thank me next time I see him, because I got a lot of love for that dude, because I don't lay all his shit bare for the world to listen to. So, shout out to me. Fuck that. Yeah, man. So, we're moving right on along to the good Logan. You know, this discussion, I will allow Scott to lead.
You know, so this is... I would actually give, if I were going Oscar season, I think Logan could also garner quite a few nominations as well. I think, you know, Hugh Jackman, this is probably his best performance as Wolverine. It is his best performance as Wolverine. It's Patrick Stewart's best performance as, Professor X. And I've been hearing that, I guess a lot of critics had said if this film gets any nomination at all, it probably would be for Patrick Stewart. And that's fine. I'm okay with that. That kind of sucks for Hugh Jackman. But it makes sense. I mean, that makes more sense than anything else. You know, the movie, it has resonated with me more so than both Split and Get Out.
Yep, I completely understand that. As the way Get Out has resonated with me more than Split or Logan.
Right, right. And it's just the more I'm away from it, the more I like it. I saw it twice in the first week it was out. I already want to see it again. I can't wait to see it again.
Is that going to be a purchase for you?
Oh, yeah, yeah. Okay. I mean, I'm a fan of... There is something I like at least in each of the X-Men movies, even the ones I don't like. There is something that I do like in them enough for me to talk about them in a good light. This one, the one thing that I didn't really like, the biggest thing I didn't like was, I wasn't huge on X-24.
Yeah, but we've talked about this as well. The reason that X-24 is another Wolverine is because dude's biggest fear and like his biggest weakness is his regret.
Yes. And I've warmed to that a little bit. I still think it would have been, in my opinion, a little better had they chosen maybe like Sabretooth instead, or maybe done
can't use Sabretooth. He doesn't fit here. You know, there are damn near no more mutants left. Wolverine's one of the only motherfuckers left as a mutant. Like, for the reason why 23 to even be alive is a huge deal. But, and she's genetic. Like, the whole deal. She's not really his daughter. She's really just a clone of his.
Sure.
But if you look at Wolverine's journey, if you look at who he is as a character...
His worst enemy has always been himself. And so it's...
Correct.
I understand the poeticism to it. I guess the nerd in me is fighting the poet though and saying, no, yeah. We want to see Sabretooth, Lady Deathstrike, Omega Red, like one of them.
Yeah.
Cool too. So
yeah, that would have been very cool. But it, even in all of the most recent Wolverine books, this motherfucker is literally fighting either his regret over the things that he's done in the past, or he's fighting to keep the berserker of himself locked inside.
Right, right.
And 24 is supposed to represent the berserker, a mindless right. killing machine that you just kind of point in the right direction and let him go.
Right, and that's the and that's ultimately the best part of the film, because, you know, when you remember when it was announced, there were some people that said, oh, of course, they're saying it's rated R, because, you know, you don't have to make a movie rated R to make it good, and that is absolutely true. It's a gimmick, or it seems like a gimmick, but with this, in this case, and the same thing goes for Deadpool, these are characters that the R rating is a part of who the character is.
I mean, yeah. You're robbing the character with a PG-13 rating.
Correct, because you're not giving people what they really want to see. What do you really want to see? If you were going in back in 2000 when they first announced X-Men, you're thinking Wolverine on screen. What do you want to see? You want to see him use his claws. Look, I grew up watching the animated series, and he would always pop his claws, but he would never fucking use them. You know what I mean? And he did when he was fighting machines and stuff. But
yep. What do you but other really people want to see? Never use
right.
them.
Right.
Yep. What do you he used them on Omega Red's tentacles.
Yeah, right. He uses them against, you know, like Magneto's force fields and, you know what I mean? Like cutting ropes and shit.
Yep, but he never used on a person.
Right. So I grew up reading the comics, and he's using those things on ninjas and Sabretooth and Hulk, and he's just slicing people left and right. And that's Wolverine. That's the one that we all know. He's the guy that fights with his claws as a samurai. We got a little bit of that, of course, in the Wolverine, which was okay. But Logan was, I mean, he's putting his claws through faces and heads and chopping arms off. And I mean, that's fucking Wolverine. That's the character is. He's hiding this crazy rage that he has, and he can't help it, but he needs to do it to survive and to prevent others from having to do that too, even though ironically X-23 does the exact same thing in the film, because that's all she knew. So
the little girl who played 23 was great, by the name Daphne.
Yeah
I thought she was great.
Yeah, she was very good too. And I, you know, I even kind of liked I didn't know how I felt about the Donald Pierce, the robotic guy, the main villain. But,
from the Reavers.
He was okay, too. Yeah.
Yeah.
The Reavers, man, I tell you what, in the comics, there's a scene in the comics where the Reavers beat the shit out of Wolverine and they crucify him. And, I mean, that right there alone is, I mean, that's some pretty wicked shit.
Yeah, it's pretty tough, man. Pretty tough stuff.
And to have them be even on film, period, is, you know, that's kind of a cool little inclusion. And even Caliban, that was a cool inclusion too, and they knocked him out.
Yeah, you know, Caliban's a dude that has shown up in multiple times in the X-Men universe. You know, and I don't think he's ever truly been used. Like, they never really knew why he was so important, but the way this played out, this little unit that they had, was really fucking cool, man. You know, when Professor X is having his seizures, and his, you know, seizures for the most powerful telepath in the world, basically is blowing people's, he's microwaving everyone's mind.
Right.
You know what I mean? Then to see that play out, but to see Caliban and what he's doing for Charles Xavier, and you know, there's so much backstory that you could bring from comics to each one of those scenes, because they gave you an opportunity to, they treated the audience as if they are knowledgeable comic book based, which I really fucking appreciated. Like, as I've gotten more space from the film, this is one of the few comic book films that gives you the credit of knowing the character and the storylines well enough to, like, not give you a ton of background. They just want to tell you the story of this particular character at this time, with you knowing all the shit that happened before.
Right. Right. Well, and so, I, so So friends of mine had seen it as well, and it was one of them commented he liked the film, but he was a little confused at the timeline. And I'm like, look, if you're judging the X-Men films by the timeline, then you don't read the comics. The comics are a jumbled mess. They've been a jumbled mess timeline-wise for years and years and years. And if you just look at this as a standalone movie, because there's a comment that he makes about all mutants born in 25 years, and that right there, that discounts the end of Days of Future Past, because that doesn't even make sense. And it's just it's in a different timeline, kind of like Deadpool. Deadpool, I see as being in an alternate X-Men universe, in a way.
Yeah, I mean, there was always the idea that maybe these were in the same universe. You're not really sure, but
and they still
who knows?
And
yeah, and they very much still could be.
Right.
But I tell you, I really liked the idea that we didn't have to tell you, you know, exactly when it was. Like, they told you what year it was, and we just know that there aren't any fucking mutants around. So maybe this is after House of M. Who knows?
Right? Yeah.
We're never really sure. But what we are sure about is that this motherfucker is his healing factor is getting burned out. Maybe that's part of, you know, when all the mutants died and House of M happened. Maybe it didn't necessarily kill him, but it took a lot of his healing factor. He's not the same dude anymore.
Right.
You know, it hurts to pop his
clothes. He's a limo Uber driver.
Yeah, limo Uber driver, and it hurts to pop his claws.
Oh, yeah, when he pulled that, when he had to pull the claw out of his hand when he was cleaning them, too, that was pretty cool.
Yeah, it's but like that's also disgusting.
Oh, yeah. But it's like the small little character detail that really... I mean, this is Hugh Jackman, I mean, he's been playing this character for 17 years now. I mean, this is a science to him. I mean, he could play this guy. He's good as Wolverine, even in a shitty movie. So, in a good one, what do you expect?
Yeah, no, he knocked the shit out of park. Like, there's no question about that. You know, I just think that when you start looking at, story-wise, there was... They use the X-Men comic book to talk about, you know, them getting to the sanctuary, Eden. And he's like, was that shit real? Who knows? But the one scene where you actually get to see Hugh Jackman is not the beat down old, you know, gray man that has succumbed to all of the battles, all of the killing, all of the fights, every scar was on his body. It was everywhere. When he drank the potion and he just went out there and was just destroying motherfuckers, that shit was really fucking impressive, man. And it was a great send-off for a dude who's done really right by the character, but the writing in his film has not done right by him. So,
right. Yeah, I mean, it's... You know, I like that now... I like it, but I'm a little apprehensive. So, of course, now Sony has just announced the Venom film that's going to be their R-rated, you know, character film.
Yeah, it's a mistake.
Well, Venom is cool enough that an R-rated movie, if done well, could be pretty cool. So, the thing I'm worried about is now that these other studios see that, Fox had the ingenious idea of releasing... You know, balls to the wall R-rated movies that give us the characters from the comic book. You know, I mean, Deadpool and Wolverine are two of the cooler comic book characters. Their movies were really great. Their last movie was really great. And you can make a successful rated R film that everyone enjoys. And I hope that it doesn't go overboard.
I mean, how many motherfuckers can legitimately tell you, you know, who is inside the symbiote for Venom, or what the fuck a symbiote is? Everybody knows Venom as the Black Spider-Man. They don't know shit else.
Yeah.
The average dude off the street doesn't know shit else. But the average dude knows that, you know, they know a little bit more about Wolverine, and they have an expectation. There's not going to be a ton of expectation with Venom. You know, it's like, are they going to introduce Carnage? Are they going to have Cassidy come through?
Well, I mean, if they do, that's the perfect R-rated villain.
That is absolutely the R-rated villain, but then you also have to probably bring in Spider-Man, because it took three motherfuckers to beat Carnage.
Right. That's true. I don't know how you pull off it. Seeing they haven't really said, is Venom going to be tied to the Marvel Universe? I mean, it seems kind of weird if it is.
He can't. I mean, they already sold the rights, so you don't get to come out and play.
Well, what I mean is, Spider-Man Homecoming is set in the Marvel Universe. So.
Yeah, but they sold just Spider-Man.
Sony only gave the permissions for, well, but I mean, Vulture's in it, Mary, Aunt May. I mean, there's some characters that are going to cross over.
Yeah, but most of them will not. I mean, they're not going to give up their properties, you know, and it's like, if you give up Venom in this film, you know, there's almost zero chance you're going to get him back.
But then that means what? That means we're never going to see a Spider-Man Venom movie?
Pretty much.
I mean, that sucks.
I agree.
Man, that's a mistake.
Right.
I mean, look. You know, Sony's made, you know, like, you know, and Fox has, of course, had missteps, Fantastic Four, all of them.
They've had a lot of missteps, man.
Yeah, and then Sony has as well, Amazing Spider-Man 2 is laughable. Spider-Man 3 is, without a doubt, one of the worst movies I've ever seen.
With the Sandman and Hobgoblin and
Dancing Emo Spider-Man?
Yeah. And he was supposed to be Venom in that.
Venom looked okay until Topher Grace's voice came out of it.
Yeah, he just wasn't right for that moment.
Well, and it's not Topher Grace's fault. He was miscast, I mean, really badly.
Yeah, was that as Venom?
Yeah. He was horribly miscast. Yeah. I mean, Eddie Brock is supposed to be like John Cena.
Right. Eddie Brock's supposed to be gigantic.
Right.
Yeah,
so I'm not buying, you know, a dude from that 70s show.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true. That's bad. You're right.
So, but, you know. I don't know. I have high hopes for the rest of what Fox has. I mean, I trust now with this, with their R-rated shit. Deadpool 2 should be pretty cool. X-Force should be pretty cool. I was impressed. I can't wait to see this film again. I'm ready. In fact, you know, you had asked me if Logan's a buy. Honestly, Logan, Get Out, and Split are all ownable.
Yeah, I think they're worth the money. Absolutely. I would definitely spend the money on.
Absolutely. Those are flicks that are just rewatchable. They're fun. They're ones you want to share with people.
Shit. Give my kids the cautionary tale.
<Good place.
laughs> Watch out for these white women.
Watch out for white women. You know, I think
they'll make you wear hats forever.
In both Get Out and Logan, I think there were kids in the theater for both movies.
There were kids in both of your theaters?
Yes.
Oh, nah, they definitely. Like, Get Out, I can kind of understand that.
Yeah. You know, but, dude, Logan, I mean, I want my kids to see that shit. I mean.
Yeah, a lot of people don't take that shit seriously, though. Like, those ratings, they think that shit is, like, a suggestion. Like, I'm pretty strict when it comes to ratings for their kids. Like, they just don't watch too much outside of what they're supposed to, and I think that does well for them.
Yeah.
But, you know, a lot of people don't give a shit about that. They're like, hey, this shit is cool for me, it's going to be cool for you, too, bro.
Especially, I mean, not even all our movies are that way, but, I mean... Like, if you take an 8-year-old to see Avengers, their mind's going to be blown. But if you take an 8-year-old...
This is a hard R.
Yeah. If you take him to see Logan, like, you're going to scar him.
Yep. You're absolutely right.
I want to read the source material if you haven't read the source material. Old Man Logan is fantastic.
Did you reread it recently?
I think I did actually. Yeah, it still holds up. It's a horrifically bloody good time.
I would love to see that.
Oh yeah.
If there was ever an adaptation of that, I think that would be very cool.
Yep, I agree. We're never going to see that.
Yeah, no, but it'd be very cool. The, you know, I think part of the idea.
Animated motion would be going away.
Yeah, but you lose some of the punch with that.
Agreed.
But I agree with you. I understand what you're saying. So,
I mean, it would be awesome to see. I mean, I just want to see a Wolverine versus Hulk movie. How awesome would that be?
Right. These are the fucking berserker. And you're just being hunted by a dude with these three adamantium claws. And before long, he catches you. Yeah, that would be pretty dope.
Absolutely.
But yeah, before we get out of here, really quickly, the It trailer dropped. You want to talk about that real quick?
I'll tell you what. I mean, when you hear that they're remaking, whenever you hear they're remaking a classic horror film, your first thought is kind of like, really? I mean, do we really need one of those? And It kind of had that coming. And the story of It has been years and years in development. The Cary Fukunaga was originally associated with it. He was a director for True Detective Season 1, which was phenomenal. And his version of It is kind of what this has become, or what this became. And I'll tell you what, this trailer is frightening. It's genuinely, I mean, it's scary in a way that the original film is not. You know, and Tim Curry did a really great job as Pennywise, but this Pennywise looks to be, I mean, batshit crazy and just scary as fuck.
Yeah, I mean, he just looks terrifying.
Absolutely.
Like, you're not going to be walking by, you know, drainage system for a long time. The motherfucker looks terrifying.
Yep.
You know, and for so many horror films that come out that are not scary and kind of weren't made to be scary, this is a welcome change.
Yeah. It's a little, I've been hearing that it could be rated PG-13, which I suppose probably makes the most sense for marketing purposes. And Damon had commented when we were talking about this earlier that, I mean, most of the cast are kids too, so it's probably going to go that route, but I envision it probably being a darker PG-13, a la like Dark Knight. You know what I mean? It's kind of a boundary pushing, like a PG-15 almost.
That 15. Yeah, I guess. Yeah. A difference in 2 years, Mike.
Well.
Go ahead.
Oh, no. I was just going to say, if you haven't seen it, catch it. It's worth a watch, and it got me interested to see it. I mean, before I was just kind of half in, half out. This trailer's, I mean, I probably won't watch anything else. I'll just go and check it out.
Yeah, there's nothing left to entice you. Like, if that trailer doesn't entice you, or if you're coming in to it without any of the prior knowledge of having watched the miniseries, like the majority of we did, the majority of us, back in the day, you know, it just looks like a scary movie. But there are definitely elements of it that you watch and be like, oh yeah. Like, they're recreating this scene, or they're doing this right before then. That shit starts to matter to you. But this shit looks like they went all the way there, and it looks hard as fuck. I'm happy for
it. It does. It's a pleasant surprise.
Yeah, man. But yeah, I think that's it. You ready to get up out of here, dude?
I am. I'm tired.
All right. So once again, Get Out the Room, Horror Pop Culture Podcast. You can find us on iTunes, Stitcher Radio, Podomatic, Listenopoly, the whole deal. Scott, man, appreciate you.
Yeah. Good times.
It was good times.
Let's keep it up.
Yeah, hopefully we'll get y'all the next episode even sooner.
Hey, there we go.
Until then, man, we'll catch y'all next time.
Peace.